Breadbox Media invites you to connect with us. Visit breadboxmedia.com to download the app. Connect with us via social media. Give us your feedback. Get to know your show hosts. Find the program schedule and more. breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome to Just Showing Up. I am your host, Brianna Helt, on Breadbox Media. Well, hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in yet again. Another day, another weekend, another installment of my radio show, Just Showing Up. If this is your first time listening, as I mentioned, I am your host, Brianna Helt. As a little background, I'm a writer, I'm a blogger. I blog at www.briannahelt.com if you're interested in checking me out there. I'm also a columnist, or a blogger, for the National Catholic Register. Anyway, it's so great to have you listening along. When I'm not writing, I am parenting my kids. I'm a mom to eight kids, number nine on the way. Four of my kids are adopted, and so this baby will be number five for our biological kiddos. So anyway, that's just some background about myself. And yeah, happy to be here with you. Happy to be here with you today. Some different things that we can discuss this week, but I like to give you a little recap of what the past week has looked like for me. The end is in sight, people. We are finally finishing up this kitchen remodel. It has actually gone quite fast, except for this, like, back-ordered faux wood beam that I'm sure I've talked about this, like, every week on this show, but it is insane. We ordered this thing. It was expensive. Then it went on back order. Then Home Depot, because the vendor that makes the beam, they don't sell directly. You know, you have to find a vendor. And our local Home Depot, or I'm sorry, they are the vendor. You have to find a distributor. And so our local distributor was the local Home Depot, and we had to do all this special stuff to order it, which we did. But then, yeah, it went on back order, and it was... it's just been this, like, saga from start to finish with this thing, and it's held up some of our stuff because our pendants are hanging over the island from the beam. Anyway, well, guess what? Happy update. The beam actually arrived arrived on Thursday. Which, I don't know, I'd kind of reached the point where I was wondering if this thing was ever going to show up, but it did, so happy day. Thursday, the beam arrived, our contractor got it put up, drilled the holes, and the, I'm pre-recording this, so hopefully by the time this airs, the electricians will come and get those pendants installed. I have no idea if that is going to happen or not. They have not been the most reliable. Anyway, if you've ever done any sort of non-do-it-yourself work on your house, it's kind of a different type of stress. I mean, it far and away beats trying to do it yourself. I'm not foolish enough to think I could undertake a project like that. But yeah, it kind of comes with its own problems for sure. But it's gone great, and it's looking good. I'm having this whole conundrum with the throw pillows. I'm not a decorator. I can see pictures. I can say I like this, I don't like that. But when it comes to sort of tying things together, that is just not my forte. I'm not very creative in that way. So it's a bit of a stretch for me. We have these couches now. They're dark brown leather, bonded leather, right? It's not whatever you would call that, full leather, because I just didn't want that high of a maintenance maintenance piece of furniture. And really, we went with the bonded leather because it's so easy to wipe down and keep clean. I feel like let's talk about this for a minute. Every purchasing decision I make now, I think maybe since we hit 8 kids, you know, it's like every purchasing decision I make is driven almost exclusively by how easy would that be to clean? How easy would that be, you know, to keep it looking nice? We have these white slip-covered couches from IKEA. Standard Ektorp. It's like the poor man's Pottery Barn slip-covered couch. And we bought those when we moved to Denver. My goodness, it's been, 8 years ago this month. 8 years ago we moved to Colorado from California. And we'd had microfiber couches in California, and I never really loved the color. We bought them, I guess, when we bought our first house, and I was pregnant with our first kid, and anyway, was never a huge fan of those couches, so we got rid of those, and we bought these Ektorps from IKEA, and I mean, who doesn't love the white slip-covered couch look? I love it, and to be honest, there's something really fabulous, like super, super fabulous about being able to throw your slip cover in the wash. And with white, you can use bleach. It's great. But the bummer is that it still, I mean, it shows everything, you know? They don't stay looking super white for super long. And the other part of the problem is that, problem as if this is a huge problem, but the other part of the issue is that with the our washer and dryer, they're front loaders, high capacity steam washer. They're nice, but they don't have a soak cycle. Our old washer and dryer did. So it's harder now to get the slip covers super clean because they used to soak them in bleach, which you're not supposed to do. I get it, but it works. Anyway, so all of that to say, we have these dark brown leather-ish couches now that I really like. They were a Craigslist find, actually, but finding the throw pillows, this is not really in my wheelhouse, so to speak. But I like stuff to look good, so I'm kind of like, what do I do? Where do I get these throw pillows? Anyway, that's your existential crisis for the weekend. You're just showing up. You heard it here first. Anyway, so we're wrapping up this remodel. That'll be really nice. This time of year is just crazy busy for us. I don't know about you, but the kids are like winding down at school. They've got a little over a month left to go. And, Thursday night, there was a kind of like an open house at the school where 5 of my kids go. And so, you know, we went there and checked out the art they'd done and the little puppet that my kindergartner had made. It's this little sock puppet. And yeah, it was pretty fun to go and see what they've done and just to see the progress that's been made over the course of the year. Lots of progress, which is always good to see. But anyway, you know, I've got 3 kids playing soccer right now, and I have 5 kids in school, like theater productions, and it's just a lot. And I like to be home. I'm a total homebody, so it can be tricky sometimes, like navigating all that. I talk a lot on here about kids and extracurriculars and all that stuff, and I think there's a lot of value to it, but sanity is valuable too, so it's always that line, always that balance. I'm recording today, by the way, from the basement in my home, which I have talked about before on my show. It is the lowest level in our home, which includes like this little furnace room where, as I record this, our water softener is like charging, doing something, making a lot of noise. I'm hoping it's not getting picked up on this recording. That would be awkward. It's like water. It's like the sounds like the sound of it. It sounds like somebody's peeing. I'm just going to say it. That's the sound that it sounds like, or that's the sound that it kind of makes. It's like charging or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, hopefully you're not hearing that. If you are, I'm not in the bathroom. It's the water softener doing its thing. And anyway, so this room is like totally the least inspiring place of all the places in the Denver metro area. I am convinced there's like clothes that need to be stored away that don't fit any of my kids currently. And I'm sitting here at like a ping pong table. Yes, I am recording at a ping pong table. And there is the iconic, oft mentioned Beat the Dealer casino wall hanging on the wall left from the prior owner, which I have yet to take down and throw out. Eventually, we plan to have this room redone, actually, as like a bedroom. But for now, it's the basement with the ping pong table and the Beat the Dealer wall hanging, which is kind of exciting, I guess. So anyway, I'm recording down here today. Why? Because the electricians are supposed to show up at some point. Will they? I don't really know. But I guess I didn't want to be mid-record and have them show up and have to deal with that. So I'm down here where if they do show up, it won't affect me because I'm down in the basement. What else? Hey, raccoon update. Anybody who knows me, who has read my work over the past, year or 2 years, knows that we are kind of inundated with raccoons over here. We had them living in our attic, a mama and her babies last spring and summer. And we've had this just ongoing raccoon situation, and people will ask me from time to time, so did you get rid of the raccoons? Well, yes and no. They're not in our house anymore, and all the access points are sealed off. So that part's really good. That's what we care about, right? But they're still here in the neighborhood. I just seen them out of the trash cans a few times this past week. Like, get out of here! Okay, more exciting things on Just Showing Up. After the break, I'm your host, Brianna Helt.
Breadbox Media invites you to connect with us. Visit breadboxmedia.com to download the app. Connect with us via social media. Give us your feedback. Get to know your show hosts. Find the program schedule and more. breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Brianna Helt. This is the show Just Showing Up on Breadbox Media. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Again, for part two, or if you're just joining us, welcome. I was just talking about raccoons and our raccoon infestation issues that we've had over the past couple of years. And even though they're not in our house anymore, thank goodness, that was bad. If you've never heard raccoons like chattering and kind of clickety-clacketing and sliding across your ceiling above you when you're sitting on your couch in your family room, it is really something, let me tell you. Anyway, but as I was saying, they're still in our neighborhood, hanging around our trash cans, on our street. They like to go in these little culverts down the street. Anyway, I think they'll always be here with us. Anyway, that's the latest on the raccoons. Keep thinking I need to give people an update about them because it is something that everyone associates me with and people ask me about it a lot. What else to discuss? So, okay, a couple of things to talk about. One of those things is, the big thing making Catholic news right now is this apostolic exhortation from Pope Francis that just came out, well, today. Anybody can read it now. It's available. Advanced copies were made available to a select few, the Catholic elite, prior to today. But today, any old body like me. And by today, I mean Friday. I'm so sorry. I always forget. I pre-record this show. It's a weekend show. You're listening on Saturday or Sunday, but I'm recording it on Friday. So sorry. Anyway, on Friday, it was made available to the public. So, and I am part of the public, by the way. I did not receive any sort of advanced copy. I am not one of the Catholic elite. I am a commoner. And so I haven't sat down and read the whole exhortation yet. I need to. I want to read it. I have read excerpts. I've read some commentaries about it, some articles about it. And I don't know. I mean, I think, is it what people expected it would be? It kind of seemed like, I mean, nothing that I've read that was in it surprised me, I guess. It kind of seemed like this was the way the document was going to be going. And for people not in the know about this, for people blissfully unaware of kind of what's been happening with some of this stuff. So there's been a couple of synods held. I guess a synod is kind of like a meeting, right? I picture it like this big meeting where the Pope gets together with all these different cardinals and bishops or whoever, and they talk about stuff with the church. Like, they talk about how to approach certain issues, and Pope Francis really, I think, seems to see himself as or see the faith like through this pastoral lens, with where it's not just like, well, what does the catechism say, or what does Holy Scripture say, or what does the magisterium, the church leadership say, or have they said, or what did the church fathers say. He really sees, I feel like he places a lot of value on, okay, but how, you know, how do priests navigate these issues with their parishioners, with Catholics? And a big issue in the Catholic Church, historically for the past, I don't know, some number of decades, at least, I don't, probably about 20 years or so, has been this issue of, you know, what do we do with married, with people who got married, got divorced, and then got remarried? Because the Catholic Church, you know, Christians historically believed that marriage is a sacrament, and that you can get a civil divorce, but in God's eyes, if it was a valid marriage, it doesn't go away. Like, you're still married in the eyes of the Lord. And so historically, if you married, divorced, and then remarried, I guess the church would kind of maybe see that as like you're trying to have two different spouses, and really you're still married to the first one in God's eyes, so now you're living with this other person, and that could be grounds for being barred from receiving the Eucharist. Okay, because Catholics believe that we need to be in a state of grace when we receive the Eucharist, meaning that when we're going forward to receive communion, we're not, our soul is not in a state of mortal sin. And so all of that to say, helping families navigate this issue is a big deal in the church, because, hello, in our culture, in this day and age, there are many, many, many people who are divorced and remarried. And should these people be kept from the Eucharist? Should these people, you know, some couples, when they want, if they want to be, I guess, reconciled with the church or to be receiving the Eucharist, they will, I guess, what do they say? Live as brother and sister, meaning maybe you stay together for the sake of these kids you have together, but you're not being, you know, sexually intimate with one another. And then if you are living chastely in this second marriage, then you can receive the Eucharist. And by the way, if you've had your marriage annulled, like your first marriage annulled, gone through that process with the church and it was approved, that's a different story. To have a marriage annulled would mean that you were able to prove, quote unquote, prove to the church or demonstrate to the church that that original marriage was never valid in the first place. When you think, And when I think about it or talk about it, and by the way, this is all my understanding of how things work. Please don't take anything I say on here as gospel truth. The raccoon stories are true, though. You can definitely believe those. But I think, you know, it's like when I try to explain it to people or when I think about it, it starts to sound like crazy, super duper complicated. And really, in reality, it's not. I mean, I think people, like we humans, have all these different constructs and ways of describing and expressing things and classifications of things. And if you do this, then blah, blah, blah. You know, we're just really good. Maybe it's the Western mindset, but we're just very good at doing that. Making things more complicated than they need to be, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And I realize that when you talk about this issue, it can start to sound that way. And I think that's part of what Pope Francis, all throughout his papacy, I feel that that's part of what he's trying to cut through or trying to combat. It's like, I think that at root, perhaps a question that the Pope is asking and asking us to consider is, how do we make the faith the most accessible? How do we make the church the most accessible to the most people, to the greatest number of people? And I think that Pope Francis senses a general perception about the church, that the church is judgmental, inaccessible, complicated, makes people jump through hoops. And I think we're grappling, what we're seeing here is we're grappling with sort of this like post-Christian culture where we're just like submersed in a culture that is, you know, we're not all on the same page anymore in terms of like, do we have this natural fear of God? Do we abide by the standard Judeo-Christian values when it comes to marriage, sexuality, having children, you know, all these things. You know, everything now is kind of flipped. It's changed. And so how does the church wade through all this stuff and try to bring the hope of the gospel, which is Christian speak for like Jesus's message or the hope of Jesus Christ? How do you carry that to the crowds? How do you take that to the culture, take that to the people? And I think the questions themselves seem pretty self-evident. I think most Catholics would agree, or Christians would agree, that those are good questions and questions that require some thought and discernment in terms of how to answer. But what the answer actually is, or the methods, or what have you, I think is where people disagree. And I don't know who you are or where you're at in your own faith journey or spirituality, but you know, I think there are like reasonable questions for anybody to think about, just kind of like, what are our cultural values and what bearing, if any, does God have on our lives and on those values? And you know, how should we live? How, you know, what should our lives look like? And it's all that nitty gritty every day. How should our lives look? What should we be doing? Should we be using birth control? Should we be, you know, how do we think about, how do we conceptualize remarriage after a divorce? I don't know. Like, I think there are good questions for anybody to think about. Anybody at all. But the Catholic Church in particular, I think, is trying to, well, everybody's just kind of wrestling with these cultural questions. And there is a lot of, it's contentious because not everybody agrees on what the answer should be. And I want to talk a little bit more about this actually when we come back from the break. I'm your host, Brianna Helt, on Just Showing Up with Redbox Media.
Breadbox Media invites you to connect with us. Visit breadboxmedia.com to download the app. Connect with us via social media. Give us your feedback. Get to know your show hosts. Find the program schedule and more. breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Brianna Helt, your host on Just Showing Up with Breadbox Media. So, welcome back. Thanks for listening along. If you're just tuning in, we've covered everything from home remodels to raccoons, and now we're talking about Pope Francis and his apostolic exhortation that just came out, which, no matter who you are or what you believe, I'm sure you know who Pope Francis is. Who doesn't know who Pope Francis is, right? But what you may not know is that on Friday, his apostolic exhortation, aka his letter, was released to the public. And the letter was kind of, it's his writing about issues related to the family, based upon these synods or these meetings about these issues that he and some other important church leaders like cardinals and bishops have had. So the most, I'm trying to think, I guess, was the most recent synod in October? I feel like it was. I was actually in Rome in October. I could make up a really neat story about how I was there to like cover the synod and all that. That would be a lie. I was there with my husband and our parish on a pilgrimage. We did go to the general Wednesday, the audience with the Pope, which was incredible. Highly recommend that if you're visiting Rome. But anyway, there was, I believe the synod was happening at that time. There'd been another one maybe last year or the year before. Anyway, all of that to say, there's been a lot of talk in the church lately about how do we navigate this issue of couples who are where one of the spouses is divorced from somebody else, civilly divorced, because the church believes that marriage is a sacrament and that a valid marriage is binding until the actual death of one of the spouses. So how do we, you know, historically, it's been grounds for divorce and remarriage, has been grounds for not being able to receive the Eucharist, not being able to have communion. And so all of that to say, Pope Francis just came out with this writing, with this letter. There's, you know, where he talks about not just this issue of divorce and remarriage. He talks about marriage and same-sex marriage or same-sex unions. He talks about some different things. And I will clarify, I'm one of those losers. I have not read the actual exhortation in its entirety yet. I have read long excerpts, and I have read some commentaries and things like that. And I just think, again, you know, we are in a time where the church, you know, Christians are trying to think about how do we express Jesus's love and mercy. It's the year of mercy, after all, in the Catholic Church. How do we express Jesus's love and mercy? How do we make it so accessible to people, while also being faithful to Christ and faithful to what Christ's teaching is? And ultimately, and I feel like this word gets a bad rap, but ultimately, how do we remain faithful to the truth while also being loving and merciful and welcoming and embracing sinners? Because look, we're all sinners. The Pope is a sinner. I'm a sinner. We all mess up. We're all broken. Our families are all dysfunctional in myriad ways. So yeah, I think these are tough questions. And so there are some influential people in the church who feel that the church has placed too great a burden on divorced and remarried couples. Some would argue that they should be able to receive the Eucharist. I mean, you get into all this nitty-gritty stuff. And in the last segment, I was talking about how you know, humans have this really great way of making things more complicated than they need to be. And I feel like Pope Francis is trying to, like, steer the church away from that a little bit. This is just my impression, based on things I've seen throughout his papacy. And I also want to say, I think Pope Francis has a real love for people. I mean, it's my understanding that back in Argentina, you know, the things that he was so passionate about, it was really the people he was serving, the poor, the people in the slums. His passions are, and his strengths, I think, those are unique to him, as opposed to a different pope, as opposed to the prior pope, Pope Benedict the 16th. And he obviously loved people as well, but his approach was different. And I think his priorities, I think it's safe to say his priorities were a little different. Why does all this matter, you're asking? Well, that probably depends on who you ask. But I will say, you know, I think the truth does matter. I think the church's historical, what ought to be unchanging teachings, I think that does matter. You know, the Catholic Church makes some really bold claims. If you're not familiar with what those claims are, you should look into them. They're pretty extreme. I mean, the Catholic Church claims that she is the church that Jesus founded upon Saint Peter, and that we can go all the way back through this line of what they call apostolic succession. We can look back, we can trace our beginnings all the way back to Saint Peter, and then of course back to Christ, through this line of popes, this line of apostolic succession, which I suppose, I guess that includes bishops as well. The Pope is the Bishop of Rome, of course. But I think the Catholic Church makes a lot of big claims. And one of those claims is that the church is protected from, you know, officially teaching error in, you know, what is it, in morals and areas of faith and morals or whatever. And there's a little tiny bit of gray there in terms of, okay, and what, you know, when is the church, when is the Pope speaking something that's completely 100% binding and when he's not? And it gets a little murky, a little gray. And of course, we're living in a time where every single little thing the Pope says is broadcast to the masses. So we have access to papal thoughts that we certainly did not have access to in the past with prior popes. And so all of that to say, it's just a big, huge, complicated thing. But one thing I think that I would say critics of this apostolic exhortation, and there are many, and there are some legitimate concerns, in my opinion, with this apostolic exhortation. But one thing I think that critics need to be aware of and keep in mind is that this idea of loving people, of finding ways to reach people who have maybe felt estranged or from or marginalized by the church, I mean, this is important stuff. Like, and in our criticisms or in our expression of concern, we need to be careful that we are not further alienating or marginalizing people. I mean, I would hope that anybody can agree that this situation, as an example, like, can a divorced and remarried person go and receive communion at church? It's messy. It's hard. Like, you know, there are, who of us doesn't know beautiful families, beautiful couples that where one of the, either the husband or wife or both, were in a prior marriage that has not officially been annulled. I mean, it happens. Things are complicated and difficult. And so in you know, people's rush to express concern about some of this, of what's in this exhortation, I think people need to be wary of sort of eclipsing this fact that it's complicated and messy, and that all families are struggling with brokenness and pain. And if a couple has a sincere desire to be reconciled to the church, to engage in a parish community or whatever, I mean, that in and of itself is a beautiful thing. And we shouldn't throw that away. I mean, I guess all of that to say, if you take nothing else away from what I've read so far that Pope Francis has said in this exhortation, take away the fact that we need to tread carefully. We need to proceed with caution and with love. And the church is not always perceived as being loving, and some of that is our responsibility. Some of it, I think, is stereotyping and unfair. But all of that to say, we need to take care to love people and not present church as a place where only perfect people come in their perfect clothes and their perfect lives and all of this. You know, I think it's like, you know, when we go to Mass, okay, I try to have my kids looking presentable. I want them to look good. I have 8 of them. We're a pretty conspicuous family. There's so many of us, and we're an interracial family, so all of that to say, we stand out in a crowd, and so I like my kids to look decent. And it's funny, though, because by the time we get home from church, everybody's covered in, like, sticky donuts and sticky orange juice and got to wash all their clothes, right? Because at coffee and donut hour, they get real messy. And I think it's sort of this funny, like, juxtaposition of how we're, you know, we're called, we go to this beautiful Mass, this beautiful liturgy, and yet it's, things are messy too. Things are so messy. Life is messy. More on this, I think, when we come back. I'm your host, Brianna Hilt, on Just Showing Up.
Breadbox Media invites you to connect with us. Visit breadboxmedia.com to download the app. Connect with us via social media. Give us your feedback. Get to know your show hosts. Find the program schedule and more. breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome back, guys. I'm Brianna Held, your host on Just Showing Up with Breadbox Media. Talking today mostly about this apostolic exhortation, this letter that Pope Francis wrote, just was released to the public on Friday, kind of the culmination of some meetings about families and marriage that he and some other influential people in the church have been having over the past couple of years. And it's, I guess, the main controversial thing to know about this exhortation, which I don't think should be reduced to its controversial elements. I just think, look, it's what people are talking about. Is, you know, the situation of the divorced and remarried. And, you know, how does the church navigate issues where, you know, we're wanting people to walk towards Christ and to become better people and to experience, like, the fullness of parish life and to be able to receive communion. How do we navigate that with divorced and remarried individuals? And I think, I don't know, it's just hard. And so, I don't know, I guess I kind of want to move beyond just this whole what Pope Francis wrote, was it good, bad? I don't know. I kind of want to move beyond that. I think everybody will form an opinion and, you know, decide for themselves what they think about it. I think I want to move a little beyond that, though, and talk about, you know, for the average person. So, like, I am not divorced. My husband and I have been married almost 14 years now, which, my goodness, that sounds like a long time. Coming up on 14 years, so married, and, you know, we've got kids, and I think for us, like, what do we take away from this exhortation? What can I take away, or, you know, what what can I be thinking about in my own life, kind of a thing. And before the break, I was talking about how, you know, the it's like life is messy and these issues are hard. And I do not envy these dear priests who are helping helping families navigate difficult issues like, you know, divorce and remarriage is one example, but there are many others. I think people are hurting, people are struggling. Marriage is a long, hard road, you know? And my goodness, raising kids, I feel like, you know, some friends and I have a few of these close friends that will talk about parenting or whatever, and our kids go to the same school, which is such a gift, and I feel like we're entering this like new phase where, you know, we have middle schoolers now, and man, like, just new challenges for the family. I think at every phase, and everybody's different and every family dynamic is different, but there are these new challenges, I guess, that to face. And I don't know. I mean, it's hard, all of that to say, even if you're not like divorced and remarried or, you know, having that kind of a challenge or whatever. It's, you know, family life can be hard. Life can be hard. And so, thank goodness for those faithful priests that are, standing by and helping couples, helping families. So I think about all of that, and I think about the importance of community and the importance of a church that walks with people, that stands with people. I think we should all seek to be part of that sort of parish community, I guess. Or we should seek to make our parish community one that accompanies these families. And it is interesting to see how needs can change, how you know, maybe when you have two kids and they're very young, your perceived needs or your challenges, they differ maybe from the parent who has many kids where the oldest is much older, or maybe you've got kids that have left the faith or are struggling with really, really tough stuff like addiction or, I don't know, pornography. It's hard. Being a parent is very hard. And so, yeah, like, how can we as a church, how can we walk with people today and assist them in ways that empower and inspire and draw them closer to the Lord? Those are all very heavy, but important questions. And then, yeah, like, what role do I have in that? And sometimes I think just extending friendship to people, being available, you know, not being too busy to have that conversation, to sit around during donut time at church, catching up with people. All of those things, I think, can go towards kind of building that community. Just being open, I think, open to relationships and open to people, and also really investing in the long term in relationships. You know, I mentioned these close friends of mine that we have these middle schoolers now, and man, I mean, we're always talking about the stuff that our kids are, you know, seeing at school or just, I don't know, like all these things we have to figure out, like everything from screen time to the kinds of friends they spend time with, you know, all this stuff. And they're big questions, but it is so good to have those people on the journey, right? So good to have those people that understand you and are empathetic to what you're going through. And one thing, you know, my own parish, I'm speaking for myself here, and completely off the cuff, my own parish has really experienced a lot of transition in the last couple of years. It has grown exponentially. It is insane. When we first started going there, almost 5 years ago, it was a small parish and there were not very many young families. Now it has like exploded. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And I think it's a healthy parish, but I think that it's interesting because we're trying to integrate and welcome all these new families. But it used to be that like all the young families were like friend, like everybody would hang out. We were all close. Well, now there are so many families that I kind of feel like, I don't know, it's like sort of little new groups are kind of forming and we're, you know, welcoming these new people in and embracing them. Also still trying to invest heavily in these existing friendships and existing community that we've been building for the last 5 years. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, I guess it's like you really want to facilitate community. It's like every person really ought to feel part of the community. And I think it's harder to do in a large church setting. That had been my experience prior to becoming Catholic. When you attend a very large church, it's hard. I mean, I think, you know, they'll break things down into smaller groups. They'll try to facilitate deep friendships being built. But I think that while there are many benefits to a very large church, there are also challenges there as well. And so, yeah, how do we help people find real, authentic community where, yeah, you can go and have like an honest conversation with a close friend about maybe something your child's struggling with or whatever. I don't know. So I think all of that to say, I think part of what Pope Francis is seeking to do is find ways to make the church, to make community, to make love and mercy accessible to the greatest number of people. And really, that should always be the church's aim. Now, how we go about doing that, how we say things, I mean, all of those things matter as well. And like I said, I do think there is legitimate, I don't fault anybody for taking issue with perhaps the way that certain things are worded in the exhortation, whatever. But at the end of the day, like, what I can say is that wanting to make Jesus and love and hope accessible to people is very, very important. The truth is important too, and being faithful to Christ's teaching. But see, none of those things, I don't think any of those things have to be mutually exclusive. People on both sides some would disagree. I don't think those things have to be mutually exclusive. I think we can be faithful to what Jesus says about marriage, about divorce. But I think we can also seek to love and embrace and walk with people and find ways to build community and to invite others in to our community. There are a lot of very lonely people out there. I'm a mom. I know a lot of moms. There are a lot of moms who are very, very lonely. And I've definitely had times in my life where I felt maybe lonely for close friends, especially in a church community. But I think, you know, there are a lot of lonely people. And so how can we meet those needs? And I'm preaching to myself here because I'm pregnant, I'm tired, kind of grouchy most of the time at this point. But I think, you know, it's still this call to love and this call to reach out. And so if you take nothing else away, maybe from this exhortation, that's something we can take. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm your host, Brianna Health. I'm just showing up.
Breadbox Media invites you to connect with us. Visit breadboxmedia.com to download the app. Connect with us via social media. Give us your feedback. Get to know your show hosts. Find the program schedule and more. Breadboxmedia.com.